Aprende inglés viajando por el mundo. And it's a book where I'll take you on a trip to 30 different cities and we'll discover fascinating things and improve our English along the way.
Aprende inglés viajando por el mundo. El nuevo libro de Alberto Alonso.
All aboard! English on the go.
Aprende inglés viajando por el mundo. El nuevo libro de Alberto Alonso. Ya a la venta en vaughantienda.com, en delegaciones o en nuestra tienda en grupovaughan.com.
Con el curso online de Vaughan sacarás el inglés que llevas dentro, adaptado a tus horarios, flexible y con todos los contenidos del método Vaughan y con nuestros profesores siempre disponibles. Contrátalo ahora con toda comodidad. Entra en aprendeinglestv.com. Do you Vaughan?
Este año, antes de irte de vacaciones, hazte un Impact de Vaughan, un curso intensivo de verdad que te permite mejorar tu inglés en tan solo una semana. Apúntate ahora en el 91-133-5833 o en grupovaughan.com.
Do you Vaughan?
Aprende, diviértete. Esto, lo que escuchas, es Vaughan Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Western Civilization, from Mesopotamia to Silicon Valley. I'm your host, my name is Guy Williams, and we are going now to the end of the 18th century. We're going to the end of the 18th century, it's the end of the 17th century. I'm sorry. The end of the 17th century, the beginning of the 18th century. At this time, there was something called the Nine Years' War. France was angry at everyone, and everyone was angry at France. You had England, Spain, you had the Netherlands, you had the Holy Roman Empire, all of them united against France. Now, at this time, France was actually doing fairly well, and France took a lot of different places. France conquered many different places that had belonged to German principates, places that had belonged to Spain in Northern Europe, and France lost. In the end, France lost. And they had to give all of these places back. For example, they had conquered Barcelona. Catalonia, you remember that in 1642, Catalonia had broken free from Spain and invited the French in. Said that they wanted the sovereignty of France rather than the sovereignty of Spain. And the French were very happy to enter and take over Catalonia. But the Catalans were definitely not satisfied with the treatment they got from France, because France really didn't treat Catalonia as a priority, not at all. And they were extremely dissatisfied, and well, the situation went back to Spanish sovereignty toward the end of the century. But then the French came back, and the French conquered several places in Catalonia, and it was all over again. Maybe this is why, in just a couple of years, they are going to fight so hard against the French in the War of Spanish Succession. And again, the Bourbons are going to have to take Catalonia by force and impose their rules. Maybe it's because they are, by this time, sick and tired of the French. In any case, at the end of the war, in 1697, Spain got Catalonia back. Spain got Luxembourg. Luxembourg back. Luxembourg had belonged to Spain, was conquered by France. Now it went back to Spain. France got the very eastern part of Canada, Acadia, back. And in exchange, well, France also got the western part of La Isla de la Española, of Hispaniola Island. Now, they had been there for a long time. The original inhabitants, of course, were annihilated. They were completely wiped out. So the island was filled with African slaves. Now, by the mid-century, by the mid-17th century, the area was filled with buccaneers and other French, pirates, and all sorts of people were there. So, finally, yes, the western part of the island reverted to France in 1697. And then it became, well, soon it became known as Haiti. It's what today we call Haiti. Now, at that time, there was a plantation economy with almost 500,000 Africans, 500,000 African slaves, and fewer than 40,000 Europeans, with about 30,000 mulattoes, or mixed race. Now, the mulattoes were freemen, but not citizens. They weren't slaves. It was somewhere in between. And the mulattoes, of course, were not particularly happy with their role in society. In any case, with 500,000 slaves and 40,000 masters, those numbers, demographically, that's really dangerous. And of course, all of the neighbors telling them to be careful, because this situation was untenable. It was exceptionally dangerous. Now, let's go ahead a couple of generations to the end of the 18th century. We've got, in 1789, you have the Etats Généraux, the General Estates of France, Estates General of France, declaring the rights of men. And the Ancien Régime, right, the old way of doing things, is gone. Now, if all men are brothers, if all men are created equal, what does that mean to the slaves? It means that they should have their freedom. This is part of the new revolutionary idea coming from France, that the old economic system is corrupt and should go, and that this demographic time bomb, bomba de relojería, demográfica, this demographic time bomb should find a way to repair itself. So, naturally, what was happening in France completely alienated the ruling class in Haiti. And they really didn't know what to do about it. They turned their back on their former, on the country, and they took the French flag and burned it, and then stepped on it and desecrated, well, whatever they could. They didn't want to be French anymore, of course. The alternative? Next door, you had Jamaica, which was British, and sharing the very same island, you had what is today the Dominican Republic. Though the great majority of that island was under Spanish control. Now, after this happened, it was the mulattoes who rose in arms. They did not want to make common cause with the whites. They wanted to take over basically for themselves. They did not want to be second-class citizens in their own country. So it was the mulattoes who began this revolt. It was relatively easy to suppress that revolt, but the slaves, of course, were paying very close attention. And when they saw what happened to the mulattoes, they thought, we are going to do the same thing, but we are not going to make the same mistakes. One of the things they did was, simply to kill everybody they could get their hands on. So this was a slave revolt comparable to Spartacus in Rome, comparable to some of the great revolts in the ancient world. None of the masters were left alive. The revolt began on the night of August 21st, 1791. And it spread, se extendió, spread very quickly all through the island. So that almost all of the residents of the plantations, which was about half the European population, they were killed in a question of days. And naturally, the crops were lost, the coffee and the sugar, because that was mainly what was grown. Europe had developed an unbelievable appetite for sugar. Sugar was one of the most profitable things you could possibly grow. And the only real way to grow sugar is in a slave economy, so that in a plantation system with workers that you're not paying. This is what happened. The crops were lost, of course, and yes, the plantations destroyed, and the European population reduced even further to an absolute minimum. Now, in this particular instance, the mulattoes took the side of the whites, at least in the cities, in order to fight the slaves. However, they wanted a better deal. They wanted to be treated as equals. And when that didn't happen, they simply changed sides and joined the side of the slaves. At this point, it became a war of extermination, and very quickly, the slaves, originally from Africa, they made themselves into the governors of all the districts. They were in charge. They were all the area in that jurisdiction was under their control. Naturally, there were refugees. A lot of the refugees went to New Orleans. And if you go to New Orleans, Louisiana today, the place in the United States which is it's very worth visiting because it is one of the most different places you can possibly imagine. It's the La Cuna. It's the cradle of jazz. And yes, it has this la impronta. It has this the impression left by so many different people. And among these people, the refugees from Haiti during the revolution. Now, their leader was named Toussaint L'Ouverture, the opener. His name means the opener. They called him that perhaps because he facilitated things or made things happen. In any case, Toussaint Tolo Santos, Toussaint L'Ouverture, El Abridor. One of the military geniuses of his time. They always say that he was probably descended from nobility back in Africa. I think that's a very classist thing to say. You know, if he is so good, if he's a genius, then he couldn't be of normal blood. No, he has to be of royal blood. You hear that again and again in these stories where some commoner who does extraordinary things, well, it's because he's not really a commoner. It's because he has noble blood. No, not necessarily. In any case, again and again, you will hear that Toussaint L'Ouverture was descended of from some kind of African prince. In any case, he had already taught himself to read, to write, a little bit of Latin, some mathematics, and he was, he was in a very good position as a coach driver before the revolution, but after the revolution, he was precipitated up into the stratosphere. He was in charge of everything. We will be talking about him a little more in just a moment.
Hola, Juan. Perdona que te moleste ahora que estás tan tranquilito en esta hamaca. Soy tu yo de septiembre y vengo a decirte que te pongas ya las pilas con el inglés. Todo este ratito que te estás pasando mirando al infinito, luego lo vas a echar de menos. En septiembre te entrará el agobio con el inglés otra vez. Mira, hasta me ha salido una cana. Pero no vengo a agobiarte, simplemente a darte un consejo. Con el curso online de Vaughan puedes empezar ahora a mejorar tu inglés. Desde aquí, desde la terracita, a tu ritmo. Y con un método que sabes que funciona. Hazme caso, no dejes para septiembre lo que puedes hacer hoy. Entra en www.aprendeinglestv.com y apúntate al curso online Vaughan. ¿Do you Vaughan?
Hello, I'm your Vaughan telephone class teacher. How are you doing?
¿Quieres que un profesor Vaughan llame a tus trabajadores? Con horarios flexibles y la posibilidad de cancelar o reservar cualquier sesión dentro de la misma semana. Elige el tema de conversación que tú quieras. Una conversación telefónica con un angloparlante con el ingrediente clave del método Vaughan para empresas. Consulta condiciones en el 91-133-5831. 91-133-5831.
Are you ready to start the class?
Con el curso online de Vaughan sacarás el inglés que llevas dentro, adaptado a tus horarios, flexible y con todos los contenidos del método Vaughan y con nuestros profesores siempre disponibles. Contrátalo ahora con toda comodidad. Entra en aprendeinglestv.com.
Do you Vaughan?
Esto es vida.
Sorry, I mean, this is life.
This is the life.
Eso, eso. This is the life.
Ah, it is indeed.
Pero qué a gusto están nuestros alumnos en Vaughan Town. Y no paran de hablar y hablar y hablar y hablar en inglés. Este verano lánzate a la piscina del inglés. Este verano mejora tu comprensión auditiva y tu fluidez rodeado de hablantes nativos en Vaughan Town. Más información en grupovaughan.com.
I was speaking about Toussaint L'Ouverture, the head of the revolution in Haiti. He hid his master and his master's family and made sure that they got on a boat to the United States. And he did this at great personal risk to himself. This was before he was in charge of things. It tells us what kind of person he was. Almost immediately, naturally, the English and the Spanish were coming in to try and take over. And L'Ouverture decided that he was actually in favor of helping the French suppress the English and Spanish. So he invited the French in order to get rid of the English and the Spanish. But then he wanted to continue with his revolution. There was an insurrection. There was a mutiny. The mulattoes rose up. They were not happy with their position in the new regime. And this had to be suppressed brutally. At one point, Toussaint L'Ouverture was walking through the lines, and all of the people around him were shot. And he was wearing a like a helmet, un casco, con plumas, with white feathers on it, and the feathers were shot, but L'Ouverture was not shot. He survived. He did not show the slightest sign of fear, and this actually gave him a kind of reputation, the same kind of reputation Napoleon got, by the way, that he was impervious to fear on the one hand, but at the same time that he had some kind of kismet, some kind of baraka, some kind of a magic power that allowed him to escape from moments like this. By the way, baraka, an Arabic word, kismet, a Turkish word. But it's the same idea. Now, he wrote to Paris. He wrote to the Directoire, guaranteeing that he would be good to France, and that he was in charge. And this was all going to be very orderly. At the same time, he sent his own two sons for further education. His sons as como rehenes, no? As hostages. And, the war lasted for years. The British were expelled from the island. The mulattoes were repressed. Churches reopened, schools established, and little by little, everybody had access to public services, and you had this post-slave economy trying to establish itself. Naturally, the army was kept in excellent state of training and with rigid discipline, because they knew they were going to need it. Now, a little later, he was now commander-in-chief of the island, and back in France, Bonaparte had taken over. Napoleon Bonaparte was in charge. In theory, Bonaparte didn't have any problems. There was order. There was prosperity. There was moderation on both sides. But, well, some historians wonder whether the first message to Bonaparte by Toussaint was, well, it was addressed from the first of the blacks to the first of the whites. All right. That, it doesn't sound bad, but maybe Napoleon didn't like that. Maybe it sounded a little too familiar. Maybe it sounded disrespectful. Who knows? In any case, some historians say that that is why Napoleon turned against Toussaint. There are geostrategic concerns as well. France had lost Canada. The whole north part of North America. Originally, you had these 13 colonies, which were English, but the interior of the country was French. And that went all the way from Quebec all the way down to the Mississippi River, to the mouth of the Mississippi River, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, all of that. And then all of it to the Rockies, considered Louisiana, after Louis, after the king. Now, what was happening? What was going to happen to France if it during the war they had lost Canada, they had lost Quebec, that was now English. The Arcadians, they had been expelled. They had gone all over the world. Many of them to New Orleans, that area. They had been called Acadians from Arcadia, from the Greek idea of rural paradise, Arcadia. Well, from that to Acadia, and in New Orleans and around New Orleans, in the mouth of the Mississippi River, the delta of the Mississippi River, Arcadians, well, no, Cajuns, what they call Cajun here. La música Cajun, Zydeco, that originally French, the food, Cajun food, again, with strong component France, but a little bit of everything, because these people now refugees from pretty much everywhere. Napoleon was losing America. And if he didn't have Haiti, then there was no guarantee that he could have access to his America, to his part of North America. If he didn't have Haiti as a staging point, now, it was going to be very, very difficult for him to do anything. And so this might have been what caused him to order the invasion. All right, I'll be back in a minute.
Apúntate a los cursos intensivos de inglés de Vaughan. Descubre la eficacia de un método que te reta y te sorprende y con el que sí es posible mejorar tu inglés en poco tiempo. Eso sí, tendrás que esforzarte. Llama al 911335833 o entra en grupovaughan.com. Do you Vaughan?
Ay, otra vez me ha suspendido el inglés. Este niño, ay, ya no sé lo que hacer. Dice que el inglés del colegio es un rollo, que se aburre y que no le gusta, por lo importante que es el inglés.
¿Sabes lo que le pasa a tu hijo? Que le gusta el inglés, pero todavía no lo sabe.
Este verano van a descubrirlo. Apúntalos a nuestro curso intensivo para niños y jóvenes entre 4 y 17 años, donde pasarán 4 horas al día durante toda una semana haciendo ejercicios divertidísimos. Descúbrele su pasión por el inglés. Infórmate en el 91-133-5832 o en grupoaugan.com.
¿Vas a dejar pasar el verano otra vez sin hacer nada con tu inglés? Vente a Vaughan. Con nuestros Summer Impacts refrescarás tu inglés con los mejores profesores. Este verano, hazte un Summer Impacts, un curso intensivo con clases concentradísimas y muy, muy refrescantes. Summer Impacts. Más información en grupoaugan.com.
¿Eres de los que cuando van a nadar dicen swim en vez de swim? Apúntate este verano a los cursos intensivos de inglés de Vaughan. Descubre la eficacia de un método que te reta y te sorprende, y con el que sí es posible mejorar tu inglés en poco tiempo. Eso sí, tendrás que esforzarte. Date prisa. Llama al 91-133-5833 o entra en grupovaughan.com. ¿Do you Vaughan?
Escucha, descubre, aprende. Esto es Vaughan Radio.
Welcome back. I'm talking about the Haitian Revolution. I'm talking about Toussaint Louverture, the let's call him the George Washington of Haiti, and his difficult relationship with Napoleon Bonaparte, who for some reason has changed his mind. This is the year 1800. That's how we say it. 1800 is going to be 1800. 1800, 1801, 1802. This is how we do it in English. Now, 1800, 11 years since the Declaration of the Rights of Man, 11 years since the trigger that launched this revolution, Haiti is pretty much living in peace and, you could even say prosperity. The liberator, the opener, Louverture, chosen president for life in an election. Now, they drafted a constitution, and they made this constitution under Toussaint. Haiti became pretty much independent, although still recognizing France as the mother country. It was not bound necessarily to follow, to do everything that France told it to do. And maybe this was the last straw, right? La última paja, decimos la gota que colmó el vaso. The last straw. In any case, Napoleon reacted. And it didn't even help that the fact that they had gone, they had expanded. They had a well-trained army, so why not? They had invaded, they had taken Santo Domingo. They had taken the capital of the Spanish part of the island and liberated it in the name of France. Alcalde de Santo Domingo had given him the keys, had given the keys of the city to Toussaint Louverture, who thanked him in the name of the French Republic. And even that didn't satisfy Napoleon. So, in about 1801, the French attack force arrived. And when they saw this attack force, ship after ship, troops disembarking, just endless. And they were in despair. The city of Santo Domingo, at that point, held by Toussaint's brother Paul, was immediately taken. They decided to burn the cities rather than to allow the French to have them intact. And they went up into the mountains with all of the Europeans there, all of the whites, as prisoners now, as rehenes, as hostages, because they had this idea that that Napoleon and that these troops were going to establish the status quo from before the revolution, a plantation system with slaves once more. Now, the French, naturally, they had the ports, but not the countryside. And it was a guerra de guerrillas. It was a guerrilla war from that point. The French had a secret weapon, of course. Toussaint Louverture's two sons, who now had a French education and who now were presented to him in order to negotiate the terms of his surrender. Napoleon himself had interviewed the boys, had interrogated the boys, and had told the boys that their father was a good man and that their father had placed France first, that France was deep in his heart, and that he recognized that Louverture had done wonderful service to France. And Napoleon said, "Tell your father that I have no hostile intention toward him or toward the island. These troops are not going to fight the natives. They are going to increase the strength. They're going to guarantee the survival of the revolution. The fact is that the man in charge is my own brother-in-law, and this is the assignment I have given him." So, Leclerc, the man in charge, sent the boys to Toussaint, and Toussaint said, they said, "Well, either you surrender, or we're taking back the boys, this time como rehenes, this time as hostages." Now, he wanted to believe that this was true, but in the end he said, "No, the consul, the first consul, Napoleon, he talks about peace, but what he brought is war. My country demands my first consideration, not my sons, not myself, my country. And if I see words of one kind and acts of another, then I start to mistrust." So, 20,000 men under Rochambeau marched against Toussaint, and Toussaint was better, a better general than Rochambeau, which, of course, made everyone sit up in their chair and think, where did he learn this? The French had superior numbers and superior experience, military experience, but they didn't know what to do, how to proceed from here. Yes. In the end, Toussaint trusted his enemies. Napoleon sent orders to Leclerc to arrest the man, send him back to France. And Toussaint Louverture allowed himself to be arrested, allowed himself to be taken to France. That happened in 1802. It happened secretly. It happened at night. It happened at a time when Napoleon was busy with other things. And so once Louverture was in France, he was taken to the nastiest, the coldest, the worst part of France, the worst castle in France, in the Jura Mountains, right next to the mountains above the Rhine River. A very bad place on the frontier, on the border. And again, one of the coldest parts of France. Soon after that, Toussaint Louverture was dead. Whether he was dead, some people say that he had starved, right? Que había muerto de hambre. He had starved. And others that he had been poisoned, others that he just got sick because it was so cold. In any case, he died miserably. And if he had been a little more suspicious, he could have lived happily. He could have lived a rich man. He had obtained respect, a degree of magnificence, and the fact is that he knew how to run things. He, without him, logistically, the island wasn't nearly as well off. And, the fact is that the people there believed that the capture of Toussaint Louverture, that this was an act of treason, an act of betrayal on the part of France, that France could not be trusted, that France was treacherous. They rebelled against the French, and of course, because Toussaint Louverture was no longer there, there was nobody to control them. And so the revolution spread all over the island, and yellow fever, jaundice. In the end, Leclerc died, and when Napoleon heard this story, he said, all that remains of my fine army, all that remains of my brother-in-law, a general, my right arm, all has died or will die. Perfidious colonists, that's what he said. In any case, that was the end. That was the end of the French involvement there. And of course, without Haiti, they really have no staging point, no access, no way really to get into French North America. Napoleon needed money quickly for expeditions and armies in Europe. And he decided that the very best thing he could do with all of that land was to sell it to the United States. If the United States had that land, Spain would not get it. If the United States had that land, England would not get it. And so he gave President Jefferson a really good price, really good deal on that. Now, Jefferson had spent his entire life arguing against a strong central government, against a standing army. He wanted America to be different. He wanted the United States to be what had never been on the face of the earth before. And he wanted sort of a rural gentry, a rural aristocracy. He wanted a rural United States. He didn't want a central bank. He didn't want, all of a sudden, he was given an offer he could not refuse. And so he had to turn around 180 degrees and find millions of dollars, $5 million, I think it was, $5 million to pay Napoleon. And the method he did was not really legal. There was nothing really established. And of course, Jefferson, his party, all the Jeffersonians had been against this kind of central government intervention for years. But Jefferson came up with the money, said yes to Napoleon, and in one day, the United States increased its size by, 150%. It was 2.5 times bigger than it had been the day before. And this was called the Louisiana Purchase. Almost immediately, Jefferson sent explorers out. And this is the famous exploration party. They went out, Lewis and Clark. They went west up into the Rocky Mountains, found a great big river, the Columbia River, on the other side, and went all the way down to the west coast. They stayed there for the winter, and then they came back. They wrote down everything they could about their what they saw, what they did, and they became heroes. And yeah, in the United States, it's still some very important, very, very important to talk about the Lewis and Clark expedition. This was to discover something that just a little earlier had not been part of the United States. All right, I'm going to take a little break now, and I'll be back in just a minute.
Menos mal que ha llegado, está fatal.
Tendremos que sacárselo.
You, how are my Charlie name is Charlie. Charlie, are you where from?
¡Sal de ahí! ¡Venga, sal!
¡Sácaselo, por favor!
¡Manifiéstate!
Hi, how are you? My name is Charlie. Where are you from?
Con el curso online de Vaughan, sacarás el inglés que llevas dentro. Adaptado a tus horarios, flexible y con todos los contenidos del método Vaughan. Y con nuestros profesores siempre disponibles. Contrátalo ahora con toda comodidad. Entra en aprendeinglestv.com. ¿Do you Vaughan?
Otra vez me ha suspendido el inglés.
Que sí, que a Adrián le pasaba exactamente igual. No le gustaba el inglés, hasta que el verano pasado lo llevé a Vaughan.
No dejes que su inglés se oxide este verano. Tráelos a nuestros intensivos de verano del Club Junior. En nuestros cursos intensivos aprenden inglés mientras se divierten, en grupos reducidos en los que todos participan en clase. Más información sobre nuestros intensivos de verano del Club Junior en el 91-133-5832 o en grupovaughan.com.
Pues yo este verano me voy a un sitio genial, al lado de la playa y con todo incluido.
Pues yo voy a un sitio en plena naturaleza y con nivel de inglés incluido.
¿Cómo? ¿Nivel de inglés incluido?
Sí, me voy a Vaughan Town, una manera diferente de aprovechar las vacaciones. Una inmersión de 6 días en un entorno 100% angloparlante, en un enclave único. Una manera genial de desconectar de todo y conectar con tu inglés.
Este verano apúntate a Vaughan Town. 6 días de inglés que equivalen a 500 horas de clase. Llama al 91-133-5833 o entra en grupovaughan.com.
¿Do you Vaughan?
Estás escuchando Vaughan Radio.
Welcome back. In the end, Haiti became a country ruled by ex-slaves. And as such, it was a horrific example to slaveholders everywhere. And so in the southern part of the United States, no, you didn't want to mention Haiti. Yeah, it was just something you didn't talk about. In all of the other slave keeping areas, which of course was the entire Caribbean, you just didn't talk about Haiti. It just wasn't mentioned. And yes, they were ostracized. Nobody really wanted to deal with them. And of course, they haven't had the best of luck. In the 20th century, the United States has been there, I don't know how many times, continuously. Was it 1914 to 1934, something like that, 20 years with an American invasion, an American presence there. And again, not the best of luck, the Duvaliers since then, but Haiti still is there and still exists. I'm going to talk about something completely different now. I'm going to talk about something that one of my listeners mentioned. Remember that this is your program, and I can talk about pretty much anything anyone mentions to me. In this case, it was somebody interested in what I had to say about Granada and about the taking of Granada and how Granada was taken with the Catholic monarchs there in Santa Fe and with state-of-the-art technology. The way to understand what they were doing is to look at some of the battles just before and some of the battles just after, because the taking of Granada, the 10 years of that war, is just un eslabón. It is a link in a chain. You had the Hundred Years' War between England and France. You had the Hundred Years' War in France before. You had, and this is very significant, the taking of Constantinople. Constantinople was taken, and everybody paid attention to that. And everybody paid attention to how it was done, because those walls were considered inexpugnables, right? They were considered impregnable. But they were taken. They were taken with gunpowder, polvorín. They were taken with cannons. They were taken with experts, by the way, European experts, Christian experts, working as mercenaries for the Ottomans. But state-of-the-art technology. And that was in 1453. Here we are, 40 years later, and the Catholic monarchs, actually 30 years later, the Catholic monarchs know that this new technology is going to be exceptionally important. And so they have established La Santa Hermandad. When you read the textbooks, you read the you read about the books, and they say that the Santa Hermandad was for local patrols, right? It was a kind of a precursor of the Guardia Civil today. But they had logistic experts. They had ballistic experts. They had all kinds of state-of-the-art technology, a lot of it coming from France. but with a master technician in the form of Francisco Ramírez de Madrid, who was not noble himself. Remember that this technology was not used by the nobles. These ballestas and handguns, arquebuces, but espingardas. These were like proto arquebuces. These espingardas. These were for common people. This sort of democratized the war, or it put the traditional feudal kind of war, it gave an end to that. These heavy cavalry riders that had been such a fundamental part of medieval warfare, all of that was gone. The the foot soldier, the infantry, you can't ask a noble to be in the infantry, but the infantry is precisely what you need with this new kind of war. If you look at the las sillas, no, las sillas talladas in la Catedral de Toledo, if you look at the carved where the monks sit, in the choir, the carved seats there, where you see the taking of Granada, you can see that there were plenty of ballestas, plenty of crossbows, and plenty of guns, plenty of espingardas. You can see the polvorín, you can see the smoke. Now, so it was a completely different kind of thing. Very quickly, very, very quickly, this whole technology improved. So that the best gun makers were Central European. The best gun makers were in Austria, Germany. And maybe the best tactics were in Italy, but by far the best troops, the troops who really knew how to use them, were in Spain after the taking of Granada. And then immediately after, the people involved and the troops involved were sent directly into the Italian wars. So you had somebody like Gonzalo Fernández de Córdoba, El Gran Capitán. He learned everything he learned, everything he had to know from Granada, and adapted it with great success to the Italian wars. And again, by the time of the Italian wars, these weapons had been perfected. These weapons were common. So it is a, as I say, a link in the chain. We have the end of the Hundred Years' War. We have the taking of Constantinople. Then we have the wars in Granada, and almost immediately afterwards, the Italian wars. The fact is that initially, yes, you had aristocrats, you had the nobility. They looked down, no, por encima del hombro, miraron por encima del hombro. They looked down on foot soldiers, because foot soldiers at that time were very badly trained. Foot soldiers at that time were often got in the way of the professional soldiers, who had a horse, who were caballeros. And, but not after. Not after. Everything changed afterwards. In any case, thank you for listening, and please listen to my next program.